Good morning, everyone. Good to see you all. Great to see you all. Okay. So I think we should do more reviews, right? That was good, right?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're that said, now that we have that behind us, I think we're, I hope, a little bit more comfortable with some of these principles. We're more than the midpoint of Amir al-Nahri at this point. So we're in a good place. So God willing, and please remind me if I forget, but we'll try to do another big review when this is all, when we finish Amir al-Nahri, and I think we're really going to have a good hold on this topic. Very, very relevant, a little bit confusing, but very, very relevant. Today, let's go a little bit further and talk about three different topics. So the first, we introduced last week something called Psik Reisha. If you recall, a little gory, right? We spoke about the fact that Psik Reisha literally means cutting off the head. And this is a phrase that is taken out of the, we're going to take it out of context, but the discussion in the Gemara is about a situation where, back in the day, as we talked about last week, back in the day, children didn't have toys like they have today. And a very popular toy, big Hanukkah gift was chicken heads, dead chicken heads, the head of a chicken. Yes, sorry, bear with me. So the chicken head. So basically the Gemara talks about the fact that a parent wants to go ahead and give a chicken head to his child. And the Gemara says, psik reisha v'lo yamos, that when you cut off the head, it's certainly, although your intention is to get a toy for your child, because again, this is what they played with, but v'lo yamos, it's not going to cause the death of the chicken. Of course it will. And the Gemara basically is saying in that discussion, a notion that sometimes you intend to do one thing and it causes something else to happen, and we have to recognize that there is a secondary cause. Okay, that's the statement. Now it has many ramifications for halacha about situations where I intend to do one thing and it's causing something else to happen. Okay, so there are certain ramifications when it comes to you and I doing things, but there's an important rule that the Gemara, that we're not going to see it in the Gemara, but the Gemara rules and brought down the Shulchan Aruch, and that is that when it comes to a psik reisha, when it comes to a situation where I intend to do X and it causes, there's a secondary impact, which is why, when it comes to Amir al-Nahri, when it comes to telling a non-Jew to do something, I am allowed to instruct them to do something, even if the psik reisha, even if the secondary consequence is one which is a malacha, it's still going to be permitted. Why? So let's spell this out. If I tell a non-Jew to do X, okay, and X itself is not forbidden. It's just that when you do X, Y also happens. So let's break it down. What were the two areas that we said that you cannot what was the construct of Amir la'akum? How was the prohibition constructed? One was that I can't say things that are forbidden. I can't say do something which is forbidden. But over here, I'm asking my friend the non-Jew to do X. X is not forbidden. Y, the consequence of X, is forbidden, right? So in terms of the Amira, in terms of the speech, I didn't do anything wrong. I said do X. Now, that's one component. The other component we said was agency. So here too, I'm asking the non-Jew to do X. It's true that as a consequence of X, Y happens. But in terms of what I want the non-Jew to do, it's really about X. And therefore, although Y is happening as well, the string, the line that attaches me to my agents is limited to X, even though Y is happening as well. And therefore, right, are you with me? There's a little concept. We're going to make this practical in a moment. But therefore, based on this principle, there is no issue if we have a situation of a psik reisha. Again, where I'm instructing a non-Jew to do X, then it causes a malacha, which is why there is no issue of a mir l'nachri in such cases. Okay, let's go through three applications. Yes, please.
X is a not forbidden
thing, right? Because that's the only way it's allowed. Because then I'm saying, please do X, which is permitted. And the why is not allowed. So I didn't say anything wrong. Yeah. And the consequence, the thing which is being done in terms of the agency also is not connected to me. That's the basic idea behind it. Let's see an application. I think this will become a little bit more clear. Okay? So three examples. Let's read this together. That we're on, there's a one. Okay? There's two sides to this page. We're going to go through source number one. This is from Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Okay, here we go. So mutter lomar l'nachri b'shabbos, you're allowed to tell a non-Jew on Shabbos, lehotzi o lahachnis davar l'mikarer, to bring something in or take something out of a fridge, Gam im al yedei ha-psicha yufal miyad menua ha-mekarer, even if it causes the motor to go off in the fridge. Okay, this is a bit of a complicated discussion, which we're not going to get into right now, but there is some discussion about opening fridges in general. If every time you open it, it causes there's a better word, not the motor, but there's a...
Compressor,
thank you, that's the word. It used to do that, right, okay. Good. So we're going to move that piece, but the next piece is the one that's really relevant, still relevant to us, I think. Even if the light turns on inevitably, right? Now, we did speak, if you recall, we spoke about the fact that you're allowed for situations of mitzvos and great needs. We spoke about when you're allowed to ask an non-Jew. Let's say you just want a Diet Coke. Okay, we're not talking about, you know, we spoke about possible heterim when it's, so just pause here for a second, right? We spoke about the fact, another quick review. I'm sorry, we're going to go on a little quick tangent here, but it's important. We spoke about the fact that according to most commentators, if it would be a violation of a biblical prohibition for the sake of a mitzvah, you would not be allowed to do so. Unless maybe it's for a great public, so in a shul it might be different. But if you're just one individual and you're asking a non-Jew to do something, even for the sake of a mitzvah, but it would cause them to violate a biblical prohibition, not allowed to do so. We said for a rabbinic prohibition, you are allowed to do so. So typically in your fridge, okay, nowadays most fridges have an LED light, which according to most commentators is rabbinic, according to most, not all. And therefore, if it's for the sake of a mitzvah, meaning it's your Shabbos meal, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew, hey, I forgot to turn my light off on Shabbos. Could you please open the fridge and get the food out? Okay, that's great for getting the food out. But now it's Shabbos is, you finish your meal and you have some leftover kugel and a little bit of schnitzel and you want to put it back in the fridge. Is that a mitzvah? No. Is it a big loss? No, right? But you want to put the food back in the fridge. Can you ask a non-Jew to do so, right? There's no mitzvah involved. Or again, you just want some extra food. It's not part of your Sudas Shabbos. You just want some extra food. So based on what we saw until now, the answer would be no. But comes along of Shlomo Zalman and says, it's allowed. Not only is it allowed with our LED lights, but even if you have a fridge with an actual incandescent light bulb, which is, according to many, a biblical prohibition, you would be allowed to do so. Why? Because, right, Shekane, let's keep on reading now. Vafilu menorah shevotzi dadleik al yedei kach, even if the light gets lit in such a situation, I think the source sheets are somewhere over here, I think. Shekane ein anachri mitzkaven lechol eile. The non-Jew's intention is not to open the light, or, right? The non-Jew's intention is, I asked them, please take out the food from this fridge, or please bring the food back into the fridge. Their intention is not to take it to turn on the light. Ela kavanaso lahotzi o lahachnis lemekarer blavad. Their intention is only to take things out or to put things in the fridge alone. Right? V'chein mutter lomer lo liskor es mekarer ha-pasuach gam sheyesh bo nora. And similarly, you're allowed, if the fridge is open, you're allowed to say, please close the fridge, even if there's a light, asher techabeh al-yedei skirazu, even though the light is going to close. Why? Because again, this goes back to our principle. I'm asking Mr. Nanju, please put the kugel back into the fridge. So they open the fridge door, light goes on. They put the kugel in, the light goes, and then they close it. Their intention had nothing to do with the light. It's a psik resha, it's a consequence. So in terms of the words I said, please put kugel in the fridge. Did I say anything about a prohibition? No. When the light went off, did that relate to me? Not directly. Again, obviously it's an inevitable consequence, but it doesn't directly relate to me. Their shlichut, the agency, was limited to putting something in or taking something out. Everything else that's happening is already secondary and therefore doesn't trace itself back to me. And therefore, again, in such cases, we'll see one other relevant case, one and a half other relevant cases. In such cases, this is what we call a psik resha, and therefore 100% permitted. I don't need any justifications. I don't need to hint. Please put something in the fridge. Please close the fridge door. Please put something back into the fridge, and they end up closing the door. Right? I cannot say, let's just be clear. I cannot say, my fridge light is open. Could you close the fridge so the light will go off? Right? That would be prohibited, because then I'm talking about the malacha, and they're doing it for the sake of closing the light. But I could say, hey, I can't put this back in my fridge. Could you please put this bottle of ketchup back into the fridge? Even though my intention is to close because the fridge door is open. So they're going to put it in, and they'll close the fridge door. Cool. I didn't do anything wrong, because again, the agency is limited. I see a lot of questions. We'll go from the back of them. Shelley, Karen, then, yeah.
Okay, so based on just this concept alone, it seems like it could apply, depending on how you frame things, to the vast majority of malacha.
Go ahead.
For example, you could go into a dark room and say, can you tell me what this says? And to a piece of writing, you could say, could you get me a pair of socks? I mean, do you have a pair of socks for me? And no, I don't have any cell phone. I just said socks.
Right.
I don't have anything, but I could go to the store. Well, I'm not going to tell you how to do it. You know, seems like it.
So here we're going to go back to what we said all the way in the beginning. And that, so let's go, even if I don't say anything, if I'm sitting in a room and it's dark in the room, black, pitch black, it's nighttime, and an anju comes and opens the light, I'd have to leave because what they did is directly benefiting me. Their intent, right? They intended to directly benefit me. So thank you. We need to add this important principle. With the fridge, the light going on in the fridge or going off is not directly benefiting me. And that's why ultimately there's nothing wrong over here. Whereas in a case where they end up going, so it's true. In the examples you just gave, I got around the Amira Lenachri. There's always going to be two things. Okay, this is to me, one of the things that make this concept complicated. So thank you for bringing this up. There are two, in my brain, there are always going to be two boxes that have to be checked off. One is, did I violate Amira Lenachri, telling a non-Jew to do something wrong? The second is, did a non-Jew directly benefit me, right? So when talking about the fridge, I was focusing on, did I do anything wrong by telling them to do this? And the answer is no, I didn't do any Amira. But I forgot, now we have to get to category two. Category two is, are they directly benefiting me when they put something in the fridge with the malacha? And the answer is no, because the light going on, which is the malacha, doesn't directly benefit me. And therefore, check, it's okay. Whereas in the example Shelley gave, I got around the Amira. I said, it's very dark in here. So I got around the Amira. And maybe you could say it's not, right, it's not direct agency, but when they turn on the light for me, I am directly benefiting from that light. Or they drive to the store, I'm directly benefiting from that light, right? So here I was focusing on box number one, but we also have to go back to box number two. Am I directly benefiting from a non-Jew, from a malacha that they're doing for me? And so in the fridge case, the answer is no, and therefore it's allowed. In a situation where I'm sitting in a room, no matter how I say it, if at the end of the day a non-Jew opens a light for me and I'm directly benefiting from that light, I'm done. Okay, we're good.
I'm going back to that one traumatic Shabbos for me when I had forgotten to turn on the Shabbos mode. We'd gone out Friday night, so it wasn't an issue. And Shabbos lunch, I waited until the mail lady passed.
Perfect.
Okay, but then after she left, I was like, I should have just asked her to turn on the Shabbos modes instead of just getting the food out, because then I could have Shal Shabbos.
Right, right.
But now I'm thinking maybe I could have asked her to turn on the Shabbos.
Good question. So if it was, so Shalosh Shudas is part of the mitzvos of Shabbos, and the answer would be, you are allowed to do so, because we would say, I would tell you, it's a rabbinic prohibition, and be allowed to do so. If you're going to be out for Shalosh Shudas again, and it's just to get stuff during the day, you would not be allowed to, right? Because the only allowance to do that would be more direct, and it would only be allowed b'makom mitzvah. And so you'd have to assume that there is, so let's say it's for the Shabbos meal. So if she could open and get all the food out for the Shabbos meal at that one time, it would be hard to justify. But if it's going to inevitably cause a scenario where you're going to need that light to be turned off, you could directly ask for another mitzvah, i.e. a later meal, it would be allowed.
Because
it's an LED light and pressing those buttons, according to many commentators, not all. It's the light is LED and electricity, according to many commentators. Even if there's some digital display, it's a digital display, not a writing display. So based on all those principles, we'll assume it's rabbinic. Not everyone, just for the record, not everyone agrees. Yes, Lisa.
Just going back to what Shelley said, and she had responded to an example you gave where you said, okay, the door was left open to the refrigerator, so you asked the Gentile to take the ketchup and put it in. But you wanted the Gentile to close the refrigerator door. But in that case, closing the refrigerator door is benefiting you because you don't want to wreck your food, or you don't want to spend the electricity. I don't know, whatever it is, you know. You know what I'm saying? That there's a little bit of a difference.
Right.
Case.
All right. Okay. So right. Yes. I'm not sure. Meaning, ultimately, what they're doing for you. You know, we'll come to another case in a moment where I think this will become a little bit more clear, because it's true. There is going to be a benefit, but if the benefit that they're focusing on is limited to the ketchup bottle, they're unaware of the fact that they don't even know your fridge is open.
It's
like,
not what's in your head, it's what
it's doing. it's in their mind and what they're going to do. And we'll see that spelled out in just a moment. Yes.
I can't relate to any of it because we were taught that the light must be off. And my light in my refrigerator and in my freezer have Velcro, and that's number one on the list when we're getting ready for Shabbos. Yeah. Light
yeah. God bless you that that's never happened and that you cannot relate to this, okay? So we're so bad that in our old, so now we have, by the way, did I ever tell you that my favorite thing, we moved like about a year ago and, you know, lots of new stuff. The one thing, I always tell my wife, the one thing, my favorite thing is this $100 investment we made, GE fridges. Anyone have a GE fridge? If you have a GE fridge, they have something called the Shabbos mode box. And basically you plug it in, it's this tiny little thing, stick it on top of the fridge, I don't even see it. You put in your zip code and you leave it alone, and like a half hour, 45 minutes before Shabbos, boom, the lights all dim and they stay that way. And all the displays or buttons are all off. And like
refrigerator,
freezer, it's awesome. And then a half hour after Shabbos, I'm telling you, I get like such hana every time I open my fridge on Shabbos. I tell my wife, like, I still, it's been a year, over a year, I'm like, this is awesome. And then like an hour after Shabbos, boom, it just goes back on. GE freezer, if you're getting a new fridge, I don't know if the quality is that great. I don't know. But the bottom line is that box is worth its weight in gold. It's like $100-something. You could get it at, there's like a Jewish, what's it called, store over here? Town Appliance. Thank you. He'll put it in. He'll come in. He'll put it in for you. And you're good. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
So I wish I couldn't relate, but I'm going to. Okay. So here's the situation I've been worrying about since I became Shomer Shabbat, which is, what if you have an apartment in an island on a high floor, and you have a dog, and the dog is highly trained,
mm-hmm.
and it would cause the dog considerable discomfort if the dog had to pee in a place that they can. And you have a neighbor who's mm-hmm. not religious, who's mm-hmm. not Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and that neighbor, if you mention to the neighbor who knows that you are Orthodox, that this dog would be in great discomfort. She comes, she takes the dog. I don't ask her to go in the elevator, but we're on the 18th floor. She takes the elevator, brings the dog back. We don't leave the apartment.
Mm-hmm. So this goes back to 2 weeks ago, or the last, two classes ago, and I'll one-up that. You could tell them. That's right. But you could tell them explicitly, right? Because we saw, and again, I can't assess the animals. I know nothing about animals. But if you tell me that an animal is going to be in distress by relieving itself in the home, if that's the case, then we saw earlier, Tsar Balei Chaim, if there is going to be true distress for an animal, you are allowed to ask a non-Jew explicitly to do something. So you'd be allowed to say, please go down the elevator, take my dog outside, and they'd be allowed to do so. Anything for Tsar Balei Chaim, we saw, you're allowed to even ask them to do a biblical, again, I don't know the level of distress, I feel a little bit out of my, to weigh in on the, but if you know your animal, and this is going to be something which is going to cause a significant amount of distress, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something which would alleviate that distress. Yeah, and that, right, for Tsar Balei Chaim, again, we didn't focus on this too much, but in a general sense, Tsar Balei Chaim, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do things to alleviate stress of an animal, whether it's your own animal or someone else's animal. Yes?
A little off topic, I know we're talking about non-Jews here, but it's making me think, what situation do these apply to when you have someone who is Jewish, who is still in Shabbos, and someone who has...
Too good of a question, Tikva. I'm not going to address it right now. It's very complicated. It's very complicated. It becomes very hard in our world with where we're so connected. I'm going to stay away. Sorry, for the sake of keeping us here, but it's complicated. Okay, yes.
Yeah, because the Tsar Balei Chaim, it's not benefiting you. It's benefiting the animal.
Even if it's benefiting you, that's not the svara behind it. It's a good point, but even if it is, let's say, benefiting you, even if it's going to cause you distress, the point is that it just wasn't included. You know, Amir la'akum, this is a derabanan, and there are limitations to this rabbinic, it's a rabbinic prohibition with many far-extending applications. Certain things weren't included in this prohibition, and one of those is Tsar Balei Chaim. It could be that's part of the rationale, but even if it is, even if you come up with an idea where it is directly benefiting you, it would still be allowed. Okay, one other example. Yes, go ahead.
Is this also the apply, like, if you have to be taken to the hospital or a doctor on Shabbos where a non-Jew can actually drive you there, but after you're finished and it's still Shabbos, they cannot take you back home?
So I hesitate to even, sometimes you could go home. It's always worth asking. Depends on how, you know, if it's going to help. Again, let's keep in mind. But this specific principle, again, if you're sick and you need to go to the hospital, they could do things directly and you could ask them directly. As a rule, it's worth asking sometime, you know, if your person's still a chola shembo sakana, there may be allowances to be driven back home for the sake of, you know, healing for the individual who's sick. We'll put it.
I think there's a flowchart in either the good book or the Arab list that talks about
what you could, with respect to
Oh, really? Interesting, yeah. Okay, I have to check it out. Cool. Okay, another example. Just we're not going to read it inside because the source over here is a little bit confusing. But another very, very important example is turning on the hot water. Okay, turning on the hot water tap in your house. Okay, so hot water comes out. Right now, how does what? Where's the malacha involved? Right, there's hot water in your boiler right now. If you were to go and stick a little hole in your boiler, hot water would start pouring out. It's no different than your urn. Right. So why are you not allowed to turn your hot water on Shabbos? Because when the hot water starts pouring out, cold water starts coming in, and then it starts heating that thing up, and maybe it's going to trigger the gas, all those good stuff, all that stuff, right? So all that is what we call a psik resha, right? None of that is direct, right? The main principle we have is direct. So if you want to ask a non-Jew, could you please put on the hot water for me? Well, you can't say that, because that would be, well, but basically you're going to have a scenario where you're going to ask a non-Jew, let's just speak this out properly. You would be allowed to tell a non-Jew, I need this hot water turned on. Okay, again, you can't cook with hot water. You have to know what the limitations are going to be, what the applications are. There's not too many scenarios where them turning on the hot water. The more relevant scenario, which comes up quite often, especially if you have little kids, is the hot water was turned on and you want someone to turn it off, right? It's also the turning off of the hot water also cause the psik resha, because by turning it off, you actually trap the water, because then the water stops flowing. Meaning for a Jew to turn, if someone turned on the hot water in your house and it's running for a little while, okay? So it's actually forbidden to turn the hot water off, okay? For the record, if it happens within a few seconds, you're allowed to do so without getting into all the technicalities now. But sometimes it happens, sometimes you're washing your hands and the person in front of you, whoops, they turn on the hot, they don't know in your house, it goes this way, that way. They turn on the hot water right after you could turn it off. But, you know, 30 seconds later or so, there's a concern that when there's already cold water coming in, and by you turning it off, you're trapping some water, you're causing hot water to, you're causing cold water to be heated up. So you have hot water running, you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew, could you please turn this tap off? Why? Because any of the consequences that are happening down at the boiler are secondary, okay? The one area where this is not the case is with an instant hot. Okay, instant hot, or there are some heaters where as soon as you turn on the hot water, it immediately triggers the boiler, okay? There are some, if you have such a house, most houses do not have that construct, but if you do have such a situation, or instant hot, right? When you have those little tiny, those basically there's almost no boiler, they have maybe a tiny boiler, whatever it is, but basically as soon as you turn it, it immediately turns on the engine, the motor, the processor, the something. Heater? I don't know. There's the engine for the heater, whatever it is. But yeah, it turns on the heater. Basically, it starts a current, and you basically are immediately triggering something when you turn on the instant hot. Okay, so again, if you have one of those little instant hot things, that would be a problem. But regular hot water, turning on or off, non-Jew to do so, is totally fine. Okay, let's go through. So that's another example. One other very interesting example. Again, we'll say this outside, and that is as follows. Let's say you have a situation where the electricity went out in your house. Okay, this is source 48. Again, I'm going to say this outside just for the sake of time and spelling it out more clearly. Electricity goes out in your house, okay? It's this past Shabbos. Hot, cold, it was a pretty pleasant day. Yeah, it was a pretty pleasant day. There's no real justification to say like, I need, you know, some extra heat. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it was like, you know, it was nice. It was pretty nice outside, right? So a normal, healthy individual, you'd have to just deal with it, right? The fuse blew, okay? But let's say you have someone who's ill in your house. Right? And they're staying in room this, you know, room X, okay? Now, in order to turn the house back on, to get everything back on, right? The non-Jew is going to come and flip one, let's say the master switch, and it's going to cause all the lights to go on, right? It's going to cause all the lights to go on. So do you have to go ahead and turn off all the lights in all the rooms that you cannot benefit from a non-Jew? Or, since they're flicking this one switch, and their intention, let's say, is for the ill person, it's permitted, right? You hear the difference, right? In other words, you have a scenario where for me, right, it happened in my house. One of the fuses blew in my house this past Shabbos, okay? So there's no justification whatsoever to ask it. But let's say there's someone who's sick. Someone in my family happens to not be feeling well, and let's say they needed a light. But they're only staying in their room. They're in bed. They're staying in that room. So would I have to go ahead and close all, not, again, I'm not closing any lights. The lights are already off. But close all the switches so that when the light gets switched on, I don't get any other benefit or not. So based on the rule of psik resha, the halacha is, what I have to do is I have to tell the non-Jew, listen, my child is sick, could you please, our fuse blew, could you please turn it back on? Now, as long as that's your instruction and that's their intent, even though it's true, there is going to be a secondary benefit, which is, you know, there is going to be this benefit, their intention and their focus, their entire everything was for you, And therefore, that secondary benefits is not going to be problematic. So this is a little bit not more novel than everything we've seen until now, right? Until now, we said, if a non-Jew turns on a light for you, that's a problem. Over here, when they're flicking the switch, you have to tell them, please do this for my child who's sick, right? You have to direct their attention to that. But in the process, they're doing something which has broader ramifications. You're allowed to benefit from it, right? So that goes back to, I think, Dara Shelley's question about the fridge where I'm putting it back in, the ketchup. I'm saying, hey, please put the ketchup back in. It's true, there's broader benefits, but my instructions and the focus is this action. That's what they're doing. And therefore, the broader ramifications, I'm allowed to benefit from. Yes, Lisa.
Yes, but and the other one, the ketchup, you specifically said you really wanted, your intention was not the ketchup. You were just saying, put the ketchup back and then.
Yeah, so it's true. My intention, but that's true. My intention is for everything else. The non-Jews' intention, correct? Because that's their focus when they're doing this is, I'm putting ketchup back. I have no idea that the fridge is open. So what's in my head does not matter. Correct. What's in my head does not matter. Correct. Okay? Everyone with me? Okay. Let's shift gears for a second. I'm getting some blank. Yeah, this. Okay. So that's the general rule of psikresha. When you have one intent for one, those are the most common examples. The fridge is a common example. Hot water on or off is an example. Again, this case of flipping switching the fuse could theoretically come up. It's, you know, I don't know. I guess it's possible. So let's keep that principle in the back of our mind. The next set of halachos is something which does come up, which could come up often. So let's turn the page. We'll go to the second side and we'll see the source, on source number 4 from the Orcha Shabbos, a new idea. Okay. So says the Orcha Shabbos, Omer Lenachri, Lasos Avuro Pu'ula. Asher, no? Is there no second side?
I don't mind that. You know what it is? If you're relying on the one from last week, it didn't.
Oh. Okay. If you're using the one from last week, the new one has some extra sources, which hopefully we'll get to, but we'll see. Okay. So here we go. Ha'omer l'nachri, lasos avra pula. So you tell a non-Jew to do for you an action. Asher nitain la'asosa b'der shel heter. Which could be done in a permitted fashion, the nitein gam la'asosa b'derech shel iser, and can also be done in a prohibited fashion. V'anachri, okay, so again, you're asking a non-Jew to do something which could theoretically be fulfilled in a permitted fashion, but could also be done in a forbidden fashion. Can anyone give me an example?
Yeah, sure. Washing dishes.
Washing dishes, excellent, right? I say, right, have you washed, you're allowed, there are ways to wash dishes on Shabbos which are 100% permitted. Cold water, no sponge, or one of those Shabbos sponge things, whatever you want to call them, right? So 100% fine, right? And I tell my non-Jewish friend or maid or whatever, could you please wash these dishes? I don't tell them how to do so. And they have a choice. I don't say do it with hot water. They have a choice. Do it this way or do it that way. V'anachri bachar la'asosa b'derech shel iser. And the non-Jew chooses to do so in the prohibited fashion. Pe'amim she'em b'zeh iser. There are times, and often, there is no prohibition involved. The atam and the reason mishum she'atzivoi shel haYisrael hayanitein la'asos b'derech shel heter, the instruction, the directive of the Jew, it could have been fulfilled in a permitted fashion. V'hanachri shebacher la'asos b'derech asura, and the non-Jew that chose to do so in a forbidden fashion, asazos did it adaitan dinafshei, for themselves. Adaitan dinafshei means like for the knowledge of themselves. In other words, they did it for themselves. Kidei lahakel atzmo. The non-Jew chooses to use hot water. Why are they doing that? Because it's easier to wash without water. They choose to use your regular sponge as opposed to that lousy Shabbos thing, right? Why? Because it's easier to clean with a regular sponge. Ukigon, for example, Omer lo lehadiaf kelim v'anachri osa zos b'mayim chamim. You ask a non-Jew to wash dishes, and they do so with hot water. Kidei sheyudchu akelim hetiv, so the dishes will be cleaned well. There's no prohibition. And this is true even if the hot water gets triggered every time you turn the hot water off. We're not talking about, again, we said anyways, hot water is not problematic with a non-Jew. But here, imagine you have a heater where every time you turn the hot water on, it gets immediately triggered something, right? The reason is because the non-Jew could have washed the utensils well with cold water. What they did with hot water, they did for themselves. So it's true for the hot water. It's true for the sponge. In those scenarios, I'm asking you to do something. You choose to do it in a forbidden fashion. That's fine. Yes.
What about if they dishwasher?
Good question. So let's talk about dishwashers briefly. I think we touched on it once. Let's go back to it again. So here's a couple of limitations on this before we get to dishwashers. One is there's a big discussion about scenarios where although you didn't say it, doesn't mean it. So for example, and this comes up a lot with cleaning. Let's say I say, can you please clean my floor? So what does cleaning my floor mean? Does clean my floor mean sweep my floor and spray with some spray and use some paper towels, which probably, you know, you don't have to avoid it. You don't have to get involved in any Surah Torah. Or does clean mean mop, right? So here already there's some debate, right? When I'm telling you to do something, which means something, which could mean something, if your cleaning help always understands that cleaning means mopping, there it gets a little tricky. There's what to rely upon to say, no, I've asked you to clean the floor. I didn't tell you how to clean the floor. And if you choose to, you know, you could sweep it and I'll be fine with that. You could mop it and I'll be even more fine with that. And that would be fine. Here already we have a bit of a debate. If like those words are sinat, like even if you don't say those words, but they actually mean something, okay? That doesn't relate to your case, Kwiat. But let's talk about, but there's another, let's say it's a carpet. So can they go ahead and grab your vacuum cleaner and start vacuum cleaning? The answer is no. Because we have a prohibition on something on Shabbos called afsha milsa, which literally means like something which draws attention. There's a prohibition against using anything on Shabbos, which is very loud, Okay? So what does that mean? That means that even if I'm not doing anything myself, let's say there's a non-Jew in my house who is doing something which is very loud, I'd have to ask them to stop. Or let's say I'm setting something up. This, you know where this is most relevant? This comes up a lot? Television. Okay? Why can't you set your TV on before Shabbos to have, you know, your favorite show or sports game on when Shabbos begins? So a couple of reasons. One of the reasons, one of the main reasons, is that, again, with the volume on, okay, there are possible other issues even with the volume off, but with the volume on, the main issue is something called afsha milsa, which is that it makes a lot of noise, and there is this general prohibition against having something on in your house, which wouldn't otherwise be something that, having something on your house, which makes a lot of noise, and it is a malacha-oriented thing. Doesn't mean you can't yell on Shabbos. You probably should yell. But the point is that it can't be something which is malacha-oriented on Shabbos. Now, let's break this. Let's.
Can you say the phrase again?
I'm not saying it so succinctly, so I'm going to say it a little bit more, then we'll come back to a more, the Hebrew phrase. It's Aramaic. Avsha milsa. Avsha milsa. Aleph, vav, vav, shin, aleph, milsa, mem, yud, lamed, saf. Hey. Okay. Maybe not. Milsa, like loud matter. Let's break this down a little bit more before we bring it back to dishwashers. Are you allowed to set an alarm clock on to wake you up on Shabbos morning? Let's say it turns off on itself. Like, yeah, you can turn it off. But the answer is you can. Why? What about afsha milsa? Right? What about afsha milsa? So the answer is, the principle is as follows. The principle is, if it's something which is not typically set ahead of time, meaning, if it's something which everyone knows, this is something that you set ahead of time, then it's not a problem. It's only something which it could be you turned on. It's like the whole notion of afsha milsa is related to maras ayin. It's part of that general category where things which are noisy, even if you didn't set them up on Shabbos, you set them up before. But if it's something which there's a good possibility you had this done on Shabbos and it makes noise, you can't do it. Alarm clocks, by definition, you set ahead of time. Let's say you have a very loud air conditioning, right? My house, my air conditioning, I don't know why, is ridiculously loud, okay? It's fine, because you don't set the air conditioning every 2 minutes. You set it up. Like, I don't know, I haven't touched it. You know, you don't touch it. You basically set it up at one point, and it just goes on and off. So that's not an issue of optional. Even if it's a very loud machine or whatever, that's not a problem. But a TV, typically, again, obviously there's exceptions, typically you turn on when you want to use it. So putting it on a timer that it's going to go off, and now it's going to make noise, that would be a problem. Okay, so now the question is how loud. So those are the general principles of afsha milsa. Okay, and by the way, this means that even if it's not a timer, if I turn my TV on before Shabbos, just leave it on, or turn on a noisy appliance before Shabbos and leave it on, it would be a problem, right? So if I turn on a very loud, you know, this is an area people don't, you know, a very loud dryer, or you know, that right before Shabbos, that would be problematic because of this idea of afsha milsa, right?
Then does it have to be heard outside your house?
Now here's the final question we have to analyze before we get back to dishwashers. How loud is loud? Okay? I don't know, right? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a categorization. He says loud is as long as you could hear it from the next room. As long as you could hear it from the next room. Okay? Doors closed, you're from the next room. So your dryer, okay? So here's the good part is that as time has gone on, things have gotten quieter and quieter. I remember when dishwashers, I don't know about you, but our first dishwasher as a kid, our dishwasher wasn't even part of the kitchen, right? You all have those? Remember, you had to like wheel it into the kitchen, attach it to the sink. Remember that? Okay. Yeah. So you still, right? Yeah. And the whole house shook, right? So that for sure was usher, right? It basically was like this really loud, long thing. Fine. Nowadays, many new dishwashers are pretty quiet, right? Are pretty quiet. And therefore, many poskim, or Avadia Yosef says this explicitly, some are still hesitant, but there's certainly what to rely upon to say. A dishwasher which is quiet, which you don't hear from the next room, you wouldn't know from the next room the dishwasher is on, would be permitted for this reason. So, meaning practically what this means, let's go apply it to the different things we've been talking about. That means that right before Shabbos, according to this approach, you'd be allowed to turn your dishwasher on. Okay? And you have to know when you open it, is it going to cause light? You have to, that depends on your own dishwasher, what is allowed and not allowed. But also what that means is if you ask your non-Jewish, you know, friend who's washing your dishes or cleaning help, whatever it is, and you say, hey, can you wash the dishes? And they choose to go ahead and use the dishwasher, that's fine. As long as you have a quiet dishwasher. Yes?
That went on every night at 11 o'clock.
Right. Good. So with dishwashers, and this is, I believe that in order for the dishwasher, so if you loaded it all before Shabbos and it's closed, that's fine. But if you load it up on Shabbos, that last step, when you put it on a timer, that last step actually triggers something, right? I've never done that, my dishwasher on a timer.
No. This is not a timer that's attached to the dishwasher. It's it was sort of, it was like the thing that, you know, on your refrigerator, that every night at 11 o'clock, the dishwasher went on.
So the dishwasher's totally off.
Right.
You sure? Okay. If you can do that, that's great.
You know, most you have a dishwasher, you can program it, you know, like you push all the buttons and you say, you know, in 4 hours, you know, do this. But this was, you know, like a separate, it's like a timer for the lights.
Right. If it's like the lights, that's fine. My understanding is that most dishwashers, again, certainly the typical timer that you set up, if I put my dishwasher on for a 4 hour delay, then it will not turn on. There's going to be like a flashing light, whatever it is, until I close the light. That will trigger something that will allow it to do it. So typically, this is not going to work in a typical case. And this case could be an exception. I don't know. Apparently, you could bypass that lock, which is like a really bad idea from a safety perspective. It's there for safety reasons. But there are ways to manipulate it. But broadly speaking, for most dishwashers on timers, if you closing it is going to be malacha oriented, that would be problematic. Yes?
I was
going to
say, there's that institution in Israel.
Yeah.
So they have a mechanism that you can put it on a timer and it bypasses
it. It bypasses it, okay.
They
right.
have them come and put it in.
Fantastic. So this is Tomet? This is Tomet. Amazing. Yeah, okay.
I was somewhere and they...
Fantastic. That's awesome. Right. So you could go ahead and you'd be allowed to do that. If you could bypass that, if that's the way yours is set up, or you use a special tool that helps bypass it in a safe way, then by all means, yes.
So I'm not sure that I understand the Rav Moshe thing. If you and your husband, you know, were the only people in the house.
Yeah.
The fact that it can be heard from the next room, but I know, like, how's that Mar Zion?
So
if you're tying... what is it,
Avsha Milsa,
Mar Zion, but you're the only person there, I don't understand how it connects.
So first of all, it's an important principle with Mar Zion, and that is that even if no one's around to see it, there still is an issue of Mar Zion. Mar Zion is a set of prohibitions which are broad-based, and even if you could ensure, I lock my door like 3,000 locks, no one's coming in, if something is usher because of Mar Zion, it would still be applicable. Even the Gemara says, "Afilu bechadrei chadarim," even in innermost chambers of your house. So it's a general set of prohibitions, and again, like all rules, you know, you have, you know, the example that always pops in my mind. You know, you have speed limits, and some, you know, to drive down certain streets at 30 miles an hour at 3 a.m. it's not really relevant, you know, because no one's out there, and so really theoretically, I should be able to drive a little, you know, faster. But bottom line is, you know, you make all encompassing laws, and they create a certain standard. So yeah. Theoretically, one could argue that maybe there should be distinctions, but it's a broad prohibition which applies even in private. Again, this is so that's just an aside. Fine, we'll leave it at that. But I mentioned Avsha Milsa and Mar Zion. They're related. They're part of the same family. It's a little bit different, but just to know that about Mar Zion as well. Was there a hat on the side of the room? No. Okay. Let's go a little bit further. Okay. So that's any other examples that we could think of. Washing dishes is probably your most typical example. Washing floors already. There's what to rely upon. Let's see, could you please wash the floor? Again, they can't use a vacuum cleaner. Most vacuum cleaners, maybe, I don't know, maybe you have ones which are really, really, really quiet. I think most still make a decent amount of noise. No? They're not so quiet. But mopping, there would be what to rely upon, unless you're saying, like, pointing to the mop. But yes?
So my lawnmower comes usually on Tuesday.
Right.
But if they were to, you know, change how they do their job and start coming on Saturday, would I want to say something to them?
Stay tuned. We're going to come back to this topic hopefully next week. Okay, it's a very involved topic and one of the more complicated ones. But yeah, that's an excellent question. Even because they are. Right, Beth, there, I didn't instruct them in any way to do it. On the contrary, I wanted you to do it on Tuesday. They weren't available Tuesday. Come on Shabbos. What are you allowed to do, not allowed to do? Let's hold off on that, okay? Okay, so a couple more principles. One is the following. There's something called hachana. Hachana means I'm not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. Okay, so let's think of a good example. I could clean my house a little. Cleaning is always tricky because some people just like a clean house. So hachana is let's say I'm having a party in my house after Shabbos, right? So it is forbidden for me to go ahead and start rearranging my chairs, just moving chairs, right, to set it up for the party. I cannot do that on Shabbos. What's the problem? Moving chairs? No. The problem is that I'm doing something which is clearly setting up for later, right? For after Shabbos. That's called hachana, which I'm not allowed to do. Where does the mitzvah of where does the prohibition of hachana come from? Okay? The prohibition of hachana comes from the prohibition of hachana comes from the malachos of Shabbos or rabbinic prohibitions. Rather, what it comes from is a mitzvah of oneg, that I have an obligation to relax on Shabbos, and when I start preparing for after Shabbos, it infringes upon my relaxation. Okay? So, therefore, there's a prohibition against preparing. But it's in a separate category. It comes from one of the mitzvos aseh, one of the positive mitzvos of Shabbos. And because of that, there is a discussion about whether or not Amir Lenachri applies to things like hachana. In other words, when the rabbis created this prohibition of Amir Lenachri, was it only a safeguard around the prohibitions, meaning the biblical prohibitions and the rabbinic prohibitions, as opposed to the mitzvos aseh, the positive mitzvos of relaxing? Even though positive mitzvos will sometimes be translated or could be expressed in a negative, because I have to relax, I cannot do X, Y, Z, but it's a separate category. And there is an argument to be made that Amir Lenachri does not apply for things of that nature. You with me? We're getting a little conceptual over here, yeah? Right, again, there are different categories of mitzvos on Shabbos. There are negative prohibitions, things I cannot do, and Amir Lenachri may be built around that. Relaxing on Shabbos, which also has implications, which are, restrictions, but there maybe Amir Lenachri does not apply. And therefore, let's plug this in. Let's say, and this comes up in Shul, we have a party in Shul after Shabbos, right? Can I tell the custodian, hey, we're having a big event after Shabbos, please set up for after Shabbos, right? We're talking about moving tables and chairs, not doing malacha. So based on this alone, the answer would be, yes, you can. You would be allowed to do so, right? Because in such a situation, it's not part of the negative prohibition. However, there is an addition. There are those who argue that the reason you cannot do achana is not for the because of relaxation, but rather for something else. Let's read this inside. Let's look at source number 5. And here we have from Chuvas van Hagos. This is our Moshe Sternbach. He says like this: Ela Shekan over here in regards to achana. Ima iser rak mishum tircha. If the prohibition against preparing is just because of extra exertion. Okay, then you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to, let's say, wash the dishes right away. The example he's giving is, let's say, at the end of Shabbos, are you allowed to wash dishes at the end of Shabbos? You're not going to use them again for Shabbos? The answer is no. You're allowed to wash your dishes Friday night, so you're going to use them Shabbos day, or Shabbos day, you can use them for the afternoon, if you're going to be using them in the afternoon. But to wash them at the end, like Shabbos afternoon, for just so you can have clean dishes after Shabbos is prohibited, right? But are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to do so? The answer would be yes. However, that's only if the issue is tircha, exertion. But he says, kivan de'eno meleches misakin ela mishum tircha. Because you're not fixing anything, it's only because of exertion. V'zelo shayich rak b'Yisrael. The prohibition of not exerting yourself is only relevant to Jews. Avali ma'isr mishum misakin. If the whole prohibition behind hachana is related to one of the biblical prohibitions called fixing things. We have a biblical prohibition called binyan. You cannot build things on Shabbos. And there are those who understand that the prohibition of hachana preparing is that you are making something. I'm not actually making, I'm just moving chairs around. But it's related where it comes from its conceptual foundation relates to the negative prohibition of building on Shabbos, of fixing things on Shabbos, there are those who see Hachana as part of that prohibition, that would be problematic. If the issue, because then it's no longer part of the assay of relax on Shabbos, it goes back to the negative prohibitions. So if Aval Me'isr Meshum Misakin Aser Letzavoso, you'd be prohibited to instruct him. However, V'rakim Osa Daita Denavshe Shari, only unless he does it for himself. Now, what does it mean he does it for himself? I'll give you a great example of this, and that is we have a custodian. And we tell the custodian, listen, you're coming on Shabbos day, you know, we need you to clean up from the Kiddush. Why do you clean up from the Kiddush? Because the shul shouldn't be a mess. That's 100% allowed. Just like we clean up after a lunch meal, that's fine. But then I say, after Shabbos, we have an event. The event's starting an hour after Shabbos, and we need it set up, all right? And he gets to choose when he wants to set it up. He can set it up right after he finishes cleaning up from the Kiddush, and just go ahead and set it up. Or he could come right after Shabbos, second Shabbos is over, and set it up then. In that case, when he's doing it on Shabbos, because he doesn't want to come back again, so he just does it all then, he's doing a daita denafshe for himself. In other words, with Hachana, right, because there's a possibility that Hachana is prohibited for a non-Jew, right? So I would be allowed to have him prepare something if I ask him to do it in a way that doesn't box him in and force him to do it on Shabbos. He's choosing to do it on Shabbos for himself. So again, if I say, I need my dishes cleaned, by a few hours after Shabbos. I need my room organized an hour after Shabbos. As long as he has enough time to do it after Shabbos, and he or she is choosing to do it on Shabbos, that's already Hachana Adaita Denafshe. He's preparing, but he's doing it for himself because he doesn't want to be there later. That's 100% permitted. Okay? With me? Right? Okay? Any other possible examples? Usually cleaning is really the example that comes up. Yes?
My housekeeper always wants to bring my last day of Pesach, to start bringing
Not bring the chametz in yet. Okay, no.
Bring the pots downstairs.
Right, bring the pots downstairs, right? So it's a good question, right? So we're going to get into housekeepers. That really brings us to the lawnmowers and housekeepers. It's a very complicated area of halacha. It might be allowed. Depends on the scenario. It might be allowed, right? Because depends what they're instructed. They know that if it's not all clean, then they're going to be in your house till 4 a.m, right? That's how it works in our houses, right? So whatever. I'm sure you don't do that. You're really cleaning out. Fine. But the point is that your housekeeper.
Sit in a box for her to bring down the next 2 days later.
Yeah. Exactly. So again, without getting too deep into this, but that might be a good case of a daita denafshe where you're not telling them to do it. They don't have to do it now, but they know the drill. They want to start getting ahead of it. That would likely be permitted. Yeah, that would likely be permitted. Okay, let's see two more examples, and then we'll let's go through two more examples. Chaf hey, so let's look at source number 6. Mutzer lomer lenachri laver chafetz lekome al yona shel binyan rav komot. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to bring an item on an elevator on Shabbos, right? Why? Okay, but here, this is another reason why your case is allowed, right? Let's say I tell a non-Jew, hey, would you be able to do me a favor and bring this upstairs? Now they could go ahead, right? You have a waiter. You know, this happens a lot in places where people have their sukkah outside and they have a waiter who's helping them, you know, in an elevator. Could you please, get the food down? Now they have a choice. They could take the stairs or they could take the elevator. There's a permitted fashion. And there's a prohibited fashion. They're choosing, because it's absolutely crazy to go on the stairs, they're choosing to go on the elevator, right? So again, they're doing that for themselves. That would be another example of a scenario where that would be permitted, right? They're choosing to go on the elevator. Now, there are limitations. If, let's say, they're my waiter we're having hot soup, and I say, I need to bring my hot soup. Please make sure the soup is really hot when you bring it down, right? And you're on the 40th floor, right? So the only way they're going to do this is by the elevator, because if they're going down 40 floors with a pot of soup, it's going to be not as hot by the time they get down. So you can't box them in. Yeah, that's the only example I could think of. Or you can't say, I need this in 2 minutes. If you need it in 2 minutes, then you're telling them go on the elevator even though you didn't say the words, right? So as long as there is a possibility of them doing it in a way that is permitted, it's fine. Okay, another example not listed over here is a doorman, okay? This happens in New York a lot, or some places over here. You have someone buzzing you in, right? So you come to the door, right? And you knock on the window, right? And there's a door, the doorman's there, right? So they have a choice. They could get up and open the door for you. They could also press the button. Now, obviously, they would not want to get up and open the door for you because it takes extra work. But that's a daita denafshe. There, as long as there's a permitted way for them to open the door for you, that'd be totally fine, right? That's another example of this principle of a daita denafshe. Make sense? right? So these are all the same principles where they are doing things for themselves. So again, let's just review what we've seen so far today. We spoke about a little bit about the first principle was psik resha, that in the psik resha situation it's allowed. We spoke about the fact that when there are different ways to do things, they're choosing to do things for themselves, that's allowed. And we got a little bit into hachana about preparing. I want to just mention one quick principle before the end of our class today, and that is about bein hashmashos. Okay, one new principle, and we'll review, don't worry, we'll review. I know we're going maybe going a little faster now. And bein hashmashos. Bein hashmashos is the time, literally bein hashmashos means between the suns, or between the bodies, the celestial bodies. And what that means is that typically, you know, when the sun sets, and it's not yet night, it's what we call a suffix. That time frame is, we're not sure if it's on Friday nights or every night. When after sunset, before it gets dark, is that time frame, right, in between, after sunset, is that Friday or is that Shabbos? I don't know. It's a mix of both, right? So basically, we treat it stringently. We say, we don't do malacha at that time, right? So as soon as it's sunset, we stop doing malacha, right? Because we're not sure. Maybe it's already Shabbos. It could be it's Friday, but maybe it's Shabbos. So that's why after nightfall, right? 18 minutes, we light ideally 18 minutes before nightfall, before sunset, excuse me. But once it's sunset, everyone stops doing malacha, right? That's the latest time you can light because maybe it's already Shabbos. But the rules of Amir al-Nachri, these rules that we're talking about, are less strict at that time. Okay? So let's read this together. Look at Shmir Shabbos Kol Chaso. Look at source number 7. You have to turn the page sideways. Bizman Tosefes Shabbos, at the time of the additional parts of Shabbos, Kshayachid Kibel Alavis Shabbos, when the individual accepted Shabbos. Meaning here, first he's talking about a case of like the summer, where some of us accept Shabbos early. Right? Vafilat Tzibur Kulo Kibel Shabbos, or the entire congregation accepted Shabbos. Afilu Bein HaShmashos, or we're talking about Bina Shmashos, meaning what we just started talking about now. The time after sunset, before nightfall. Adzman Muat Samach Livnei Tzeisar Kochavim, till the time a little bit close to the stars coming out. Mutzer Lomer Lenachri Lasos Kamalachi, or let's tell a non-Jew to do Malacha. Gam Im Yesh Basiyas Mishum Isra Torah, even if it is biblically prohibited. Im Amnam Yesh Ba Mishum Tzorach Gadol, if there's a great need. Tzorach Shabbos, or there's a Shabbos need. Otzorach mitzvah, or a mitzvah need. So in those three scenarios where it's going to help your Shabbos, or it's going to help you do a mitzvah, or there's a great need, meaning some financial loss, you're allowed to ask an adju explicitly during that short window of time. Okay? So basically, again, after sunset, starts getting dark, you just lit candles, like, oh, I forgot to fill in the blank, right? This happens often, right? So for example, you know, we just happened to us a few months ago. We forgot, you know, my wife forgot to plug in the crock pot. There was enough hot food for Shabbos. It wasn't like we needed this, the chillant, but it was part of our Shabbos meal. So I quickly went to the neighbor and I said, could you please plug in the crock pot? Yeah, right? Ironically, he's married to a Jew, but that's what we're down to in this area. But bottom line is, we're one of the few blocks in this area. But bottom line is, right, so on Shabbos itself, I would not be allowed to ask him to do so, but this was allowed in this scenario, right? So, or I need lights on Shabbos, not because I need them for my Suda, this is where I read on Shabbos, right? So typically, I can't just ask a non-Jew to do so, but it's part of my Oneg Shabbos, I'm allowed to do so. Right? Or a big loss. You know, this happened one of the first weeks I was married. I remember we were out in Florida, actually, and someone had left the light on, the mirror light on in the car. And it was like a 3-day yomtiv, okay? So basically, the car is going to be dead after Shabbos, right? So if it was left on, we realized right after we lit. So what do? We went and found, it was very hard, by the way, in Florida, like you said, to find an Ajir. Everyone's like, oh, I'm Jewish, I'd be happy to do it. I'm like, no. You know, what's it called? But basically, until we found someone to be able to do it. But bottom line is, those would be scenarios where we'd be allowed to ask an Jew to go ahead and do these things for us during that time. Again, either for the sake of a mitzvah, not necessarily a Shabbos related mitzvah, any need of Shabbos, not if it's like the biggest need of Shabbos, but just part of my comfort of Shabbos, or it's going to prevent me from a loss, I'd be allowed to do those things during Bein HaShmashos. That's usually, right, as soon as you light is when you remember everything, right? Right. It's not like a minute before, and it's not 4 hours later. It's like as soon as you light, but that's good, because then you have ideally we don't do it all the way up until nightfall, but certainly for the first like half hour or so after sunset, you could go ahead and ask an non-Jew to do these things for those purposes.
After
18 minutes, let's review quickly. 18 minutes is before sunset. Right? Sunset is the time that no matter what, Shabbos starts for us. But the next half hour or so, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do things for the sake of a mitzvah, for the sake of Shabbos, or for the sake to prevent a great loss. Yes?
So then what about
count the 18 minutes. You just said you're counting from the 18 from Shkia,
mm-hmm.
a half an hour. But what about you lit candles at regular lift-bench time? You've now got 18 minutes before.
So you have 38 minutes. God bless you if you lit at 18 minutes. Okay, that's great. You should. Yeah, no. Yeah, you have 38 minutes because. 48, thank you. It's early. Sorry. Yes, you have 48 minutes, right? No, the fact that you lit is inconsequential to this halacha.
Okay, but that 18 minutes doesn't have a different...
It doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. It's sunset. Bein Hashmashos is from sunset. Again, if this would be true if I accepted Shabbos early, right? I'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to go ahead and do things.
So if you accepted Shabbos early, then... For some people, it's not Shabbos yet. So does that change the
So we're getting back to Tikvah. I'm not going there right now. But theoretically, you'd be allowed to ask...
No, not asking a Jew, but asking a Gentile. In other words, you know, in the winter, you know, let's say, you know, it's not till 8:30, whatever, 7:30
right.
at night, and you've made Shabbos at 7. So for that half an hour, can you just ask the Gentile to do any... I mean,
not anything. There are all these things. So Shabbos, I have to have a Shabbos need.
But for some people, it's
not even Shabbos, so... You would still have to only be asking about those things. For you, you'd only be allowed to ask for a great need, which is most your cases. It's going to be some financial loss. Like, it's not like, you know, nothing. It'd have to, any mitzvah, any benefit for Shabbos would all be allowed. So something maybe will come back to next week, something to think about. There are two Bein HaShmashos every Shabbos. There's a Bein HaShmashos on the way in, and the Bein HaShmashos on the way out. The question is, does it apply equally on the way out? We'll leave this as something to think about over the course of the week. We'll pick up on this, God willing, next week. Have a great week.